Verse 87. Even if your enemy is disturbed and unhappy, why should you feel happy? Because with your mental expression, it will not harm others. And in accordance with your desire, even if others, the enemy suffers, why you should enjoy or be happy? Now if you say that I get some satisfaction, then that is the worst thing, to destroy yourself. For example, when the fisherman catches the fish, then the fish suffers being caught on the hook. So similarly, you will also be caught like the fish that has been caught by the fisherman, and you will be cooked alive in the pot in the hell realm. And also through prayers and name and fame and respect, none of this will help you accumulate your merit, or nor prolong your life, nor increase your force and strength, and nor will make you healthy. So therefore, in this way, if you are able to analyze which is really useful for you or not, then you will find that there is no purpose for yourself. And if you say that I'm doing all this simply for some mental happiness, then you should enjoy in some pursuits like gambling, drinking, and so on. And some people with the attachment to name and fame, they give up all their wealth, and some with the pursuit to become a hero, war hero, they go to war and lose their life. So therefore, what is the use of such mere words? Because if you lose your life, then who will be able to experience such peace and happiness? So such experiences really like the collapsing of a sand castle. When a sand castle collapses, then the children feel very unhappy and cry. So similarly, when your praise and fame decreases, if you feel unhappy, then you are like a child. And in the case of the word that is being used to praise you, it doesn't have a motivation to praise you. Whether it's your enemy or yourself, and somebody praises your enemy or yourself, then what is the benefit of the joy that is being experienced by others? Because such a joy that is found in the mind of other person, one who praises your quality or qualities of the enemies, is enjoyed by that person and not by yourself, and you will not be able to enjoy even a part of it. So therefore, why you should feel so happy with that? And if you simply say that when the person who makes the praise feels happy, then you also feel happy, then in that case you should adopt such an attitude towards all sentient beings. So therefore, why is it that you feel unhappy when your enemy physically and mentally experiences happy and joy? So therefore, just as you experience happiness when others praise you, So the kind of happiness that you experience when others praise you, if you analyze that carefully, then that is not a cause of happiness. So it is a happiness that has no sense at all. So this is really like the manner of a child. And not only that, when others praise you, so when others praise you and when your name and fame increases, then you get puffed up, you get arrogant, and your mind get distracted, and this will also obstruct developing feeling of sadness towards the nature of samsara. So therefore, praise, name and fame, even though these are necessary, these are some of the results of having achieved a good human life, but however, this will definitely distract your mind from virtuous deeds. So there is this risk of these perfections destroying you, and that will also disturb the feeling of renunciation, and you will also develop jealousy towards those others who have qualities. As I said earlier, when you develop some energy and the power to be able to compete with others, then you develop jealousy towards others, competitiveness to others, and likewise your own perfection and perfection of others also destroyed. And therefore, praise, name and fame, when others make an effort to destroy your name and fame, so this really seems like protecting you from falling into negative state of existence, falling into bad state of existence. So therefore, how come that you're angry with others when others harm your name and fame and bring bad reputation? Then that is actually protecting you from falling into negative state of existence, because when your fame and name increases, you get arrogant and you end up performing negative deeds, and that becomes a cause to fall into negative state of existence. And verse 100, I am someone who aspires to get liberated, so I should not be bound by wealth and respects. And therefore, those people who help me untie this bondage, who helps me to get liberated, how should I become angry with these people? So that means you are someone who aspires to practice bodhicitta, aspires to get liberated from all kinds of bondage of afflictive emotions, and you are someone who is determined to break the bondage of afflictive emotions of yourself and of all other sentient beings. So therefore, those who you see as a kind of enemy, who liberates you from the bondage of name and fame, how should you get angry towards such a person? You should rather be able to see this person as very kind. Out of verse 101, out of ignorance you develop attachment to him and name and respect and friends, and therefore you destroy your virtuous deeds, and therefore there is a likelihood of falling into suffering, into a state of negative state of existence. At that time, as if blessed by the Buddhas, you encounter such obstructions from your enemy, which is really like opening the door towards liberation. So to such a person, why should you get angry, or how can you get angry? Verse 102, and therefore, do not say that this enemy is the obstruction for your merit, and therefore it is improper to get angry to such a person, because there is no practice that can compare the practice of patience. And therefore, if you do not abide in such a practice, and because of your own fault, because of your strong habituation with the afflictive emotions, because of your weak antidote, development of weak antidote, if you are unable to tolerate this enemy, and then you are only obstructing the cause of merit, which is abiding near you, which is existing here near you. And normally when we talk about cause, cause refers to something where a fruit can exist in the existence, due to the existence of the cause, and in the absence of the cause, the fruit cannot arise. In other words, when something cannot arise in the non-existence of something, and something comes to existence due to existence of something, then that is called cause. So here also, this is true in the case of the obstruction created by the enemy. So therefore, how could you call that enemy as an obstruction? Now, that means in the case of practice of patience, if there is no enemy that disturbs your mind, you can't practice patience. You can't practice patience in relation to Buddhas, in relation to your relatives and friends, in relation to neutral beings, and you can develop patience and practice patience only in relation to your enemies. So therefore, such a practice of patience will not be there in the absence of an enemy that angers you. And when that enemy that disturbs your mind is there, then the practice of patience is there. So therefore, this enemy that provokes you, that makes you angry, is the cause of the practice of patience. So therefore, how can you say that enemy as the obstruction for accumulation of merit? For example, if someone like a beggar begs something from you, then that you should not see that beggar as an obstruction for the practice of giving. And similarly, an abbot, when he gives the ordination, it is improper to see that abbot who gives the ordination as the obstruction to the ordination. And in the world, there are many beggars to whom you can practice giving. However, there are not many who will harm you. So, unless you harm others, there are not many who will harm you. So, therefore, the opportunity for practicing patience is very difficult. So, therefore, without making any special hardship, just like suddenly found a treasure in the house, as an assistance in the way of life towards enlightenment, you should feel happy towards the enemy who has provided such an opportunity to practice patience. And therefore, since this accumulation of merit is done through the joint effort of the presence of this enemy and one's own practice of patience, so therefore one should dedicate the fruit of such practice of patience first to the enemy. Now here again you might try to counter this instruction by saying that this may be true, but in the case of the enemy, he doesn't have the motivation thinking that I will provide this person an opportunity to practice patience. So therefore, why should I dedicate the merit of this practice to this enemy. And this is also improper, because so long as you get benefit, it is not the question whether that other object or person has the motivation or not. If in that case you should not also show respect or venerate to the sublime dharma or teaching, because the dharma also has no motivation to benefit you. For example, in the case of a person who develops nirvana or true cessation, as soon as one develops the state of true cessation or nirvana within one's mind, one gets protected, one gets freed from samsara. But this true cessation has no motivation to benefit you. Now again you will try to counter this argument by saying that this is again different, because in the case of this enemy, even though the enemy may have in the case of this enemy, it has even the motivation and intention to harm you. Therefore, the enemy is not an object of respect and veneration. And this is answered by saying that this is also a wrong. This is countered by saying that in that this is also improper, because in that case you will get no opportunity to practice patience. Because if everyone is like a medicine, everybody is like a physician who really has the wish to benefit you, then how could you develop such patience? Because in the case of a physician, even if the physician operates upon your body because he has motivation to benefit you, you cannot talk about practicing patience against that physician or doctor. So therefore, since it is in relation to the enemy who has a strong hatred towards you, that you are able to cultivate patience. And therefore, such an enemy is the cause of your practice of patience. So therefore, irrespective of his the motivation or not to benefit you, therefore, they are object of respect and veneration. And if you think about all meaning of all these verses, there's really no proper argument that you can offer. You can simply say, I absolutely agree with you. And therefore, the field of sentient beings and the field of Buddhas, the Buddha taught about two objects or fields where you can get benefited. That's the field of sentient beings and the field of the Buddhas. And in relation to sentient beings, you are able to develop loving kindness, compassion, both towards friends and relatives, and also towards neutral sentient beings. And by focusing towards sentient beings who are your enemy, you can again develop loving kindness and compassion, thinking that when they harm you, you can think that they are accumulating negative deeds and therefore they will suffer. And realizing this, you can again develop compassion. So therefore, whether it's in relation to sentient beings who are your friends and relatives, or neutral sentient beings, or enemies, in relation to them, you can develop loving kindness and compassion. So therefore, these sentient beings are the field where you can grow the crops of loving kindness, compassion, so on. Then in the case of the Buddhas, they are also the field of development of positive qualities, because it is in relation to them that we are able to achieve enlightenment. So these are said to be the supreme field of collecting merit. And therefore Buddha spoke about these two kinds of fields. And it is not only said by Buddha, but even if you use your logic and reason, you will find that there are many people who had really venerated and pleased these fields, the Buddhas and sentient beings, that they have achieved the twin purposes, the purposes of oneself and purposes of other sentient beings, and thus have achieved perfect state of realization. And it's by there are many people who had venerated and respected these two fields and have fulfilled the two purposes and achieved enlightenment. Verse 113. Now, since it is since the achievement of higher qualities like the ten powers and so on are achieved equally in relation to the sentient beings and Buddhas, then how come that you respect to the Buddhas and not to the sentient beings? This is unfair. This is improper. And since the state of Buddhahood is actualized both in relation to the sentient beings and also in relation to the Buddhas, how come that you disrespect the sentient beings and respect and venerate the Buddhas? But at the same time, we are not saying that the Buddhas and sentient beings are equal in terms of the qualities. Here, when we say that they are equal, this is said in terms of being able to actualize the state of enlightenment. But they are not equal in terms of their qualities. But they are in same. They are same in terms of being able to achieve omniscience as a resultant state. So from the point of view of the fruit, they are not similar, they are not equal. And even though in terms of qualities they are not equal, but sentient beings also have the quality to grant enlightenment and so on. So therefore, they are equally the field of collecting merit. In fact, our position of strong loving kindness and the merits that we have actualized in terms of making offerings, these are the greatness of the sentient beings. And because in the absence of sentient beings as the field, it is not possible to develop loving kindness. And when you develop faith towards the Buddhas, and then you accumulate certain merits, and this is due to the greatness of the Buddhas. And therefore, in terms of being a cause to actualize the qualities of the Buddha, these two are equal. In terms of infinite qualities like that of ocean, the Buddhas and sentient beings, of course, are not the same. However, even if somebody possesses a partial of those qualities that is responsible for actualizing one of those supreme qualities, then that sentient being that who possesses that partial qualities, that sentient being also is an object of respect. So therefore, even if you offer all the three realms to venerate that sentient being who possesses the partial quality of the Buddha, that will not be enough. Even though Buddhas and sentient beings, they are not equal in terms of the qualities, but the sentient beings also possess a partial quality as a cause to produce the supreme state of Buddhahood. And it is from that context that sentient beings are also regarded as object of veneration and respect. And it is from that point of view that all sentient beings are object of veneration and respect. And you should also venerate and respect sentient beings by thinking that it is through this way that the Buddhas will be pleased. And so verse 119 says that other reasons are that the compassionate Buddha who is without deceit and cunningness and who is friend of all sentient beings and who through actual practice had benefited immeasurable sentient beings and whose work is only to please sentient beings. So the only way that by which we can please the Buddhas is by benefiting the sentient beings. We can repay the kindness of the Buddhas by pleasing the sentient beings, and no, there will be no other way to please him. So these Buddhas who are the friends of all the sentient beings and who had performed immeasurable benefits to the sentient beings, the only way to benefit these Buddhas of the three times is by pleasing the Buddhas. These infinite sentient beings who are as limitless as the end of the space, who are without help, who are without protection, it is in relation to these sentient beings that first of all Buddha developed bodhicitta and then practiced the six perfections, including even sacrificing one's own life, and had lived in hell realms in order to liberate just one sentient being. So verse 120 says that it is for the sake of sentient beings that the Buddhas in many lives have even sacrificed their life. And so it is by benefiting these sentient beings that you will be able to repay the kindness of these Buddhas. And therefore, even if these sentient beings harm you, you should not mentally get disturbed. Since instead of getting angry and mentally disturbed, all your physical, verbal and mental actions should be positive and constructive. And also, even in the case of Buddha himself, it is for the sake of sentient beings that he had even sacrificed his own life and body. So it is towards these sentient beings, how could out of ignorance I should become angry? So instead of getting arrogant and angry toward these sentient beings, I should therefore act as a servant to all these sentient beings. Verse 122, when the sentient beings are well and happy, then the Buddhas get pleased, and when they are harmed, the Buddhas get displeased.
Mm-hmm.
When these sentient beings are pleased, then the Buddhas also get pleased. When you harm them, you also directly harm the Buddhas. And if you harm them, there is no way to please the Buddhas. Just as if a person's whole body is on fire, then that person cannot have mental peace. Similarly, if you have harmed all the sentient beings, then there is no way you can please the Buddhas. As I said earlier, the Buddhas first of all cultivated bodhicitta for the benefit of sentient beings, and then he accumulated merit for three countless eons, also for the benefit of sentient beings, and finally achieved enlightenment, and that also for the benefit of sentient beings. And therefore, it is improper to categorize some sections of sentient beings as enemies and ignore them, and similarly to harm them, and similarly categorize another section as neutral and ignore them. And it is in this way, this is really like harming the Buddhas indirectly. And therefore, I will today individually disclose and confess the negative deeds which had harmed sentient beings and displeased the compassionate Buddhas, and I ask their forgiveness for the things that I have done which displeases them. And in order to please the Tathagatas and Buddhas, from today onwards I will lead a life which will definitely commit myself as a slave to the sentient beings, and because of I will regard all sentient beings as my master, and I will consider myself as their slave, and so therefore even if these sentient beings beat me or harm me, or even if they kill me, I will not revenge them or reply back, and therefore I ask the protectors of this world to be pleased. All these sentient beings are owned and taken care of by the compassionate protectors, the Buddhas, and there is no doubt about that. And in this way we can say that these sentient beings that I see today are in the nature of the Buddha, are possessed by the Buddha, therefore why should I not respect to them? Right now the sentient beings may be in a deplorable situation. However, all these sentient beings are the focus of the compassion of all the Buddhas. The Buddhas consider these sentient beings as their own children, and all these sentient beings also possess the Buddha nature or Buddha potential, and they all possess the seed to achieve enlightenment. Not only you should not get angry toward these sentient beings, but should also develop one-pointed respect and veneration, because this is the only way by which you can please the Buddhas. And on the other hand, if you disregard the sentient beings, and on the other hand, if you make offerings to the Buddha, that will not please the Buddhas. The best way of the best way of pleasing the Buddhas and the best offering to the Buddhas is pleasing the sentient beings, and this is the best way of fulfilling your genuine purpose. Because from beginningless time you want happiness and do not want suffering, and it is on that purpose you have entrusted yourself to the self-cherishing attitude and the self-grasping attitude, wishing that you will be benefited by such practices, and thereby you have been deceived for countless lives. Therefore, today I will change this way of life, I will change this attitude, and I will ignore the self-cherishing attitude, and instead I will cherish the well-being of other sentient beings, and I will also change the attitude of seeing all phenomena as having independent existence. I will now try to see all sentient beings in the nature of interdependent origination, and will reflect on the meaning of emptiness, and it is in this way I develop the antidotes against self-cherishing attitude and self-grasping, and it is in this way I will fulfill the purpose of other sentient beings, and it is fulfilling the purposes of other sentient beings that your own purposes will be fulfilled. So this is the only way to eliminate the sufferings of other sentient beings, and when you meditate on loving kindness, patience towards all sentient beings, then that is the best way of eliminating the sufferings of sentient beings. So therefore I will always undertake such a practice, reflecting through different manners. Gradually you will be able to develop total conviction, and therefore from today onwards until to the end of the space I will only perform those actions which is beneficial and useful to others. As long as space remains, as long as sentient beings remain, till that long I will also abide and dispense the sufferings of sentient beings. Recite such verses, reflect on the meaning, and make your mind habituated with those practices, and if you are able to do so, then you are having encountered Buddha's teaching. The meaning of your having encountered Buddha's teaching will be fulfilled. The meaning of your having obtained human life will be fulfilled. And not only that, starting from this life, you will be able to say goodbye to the life of samsara. And also you should undertake such a practice in terms of benefits and sufferings. For example, if some of the people or people from the king, even if they keep on harming many other people, but a person who has farsightedness will not retaliate to this man of the king, because it is not only these people, but it is also the power of the king which you have to take into consideration. So similarly, never ignore or the harm. So therefore, even if you encounter some minor harms, do not ignore them, because the guardians of the hells and the Buddhas who possess great compassion, these are its forces, its supports. So therefore, develop loving kindness and compassion towards all sentient beings, and it's through such a practice that not only you will actualize Buddhahood in the future lives, but even in this life you will obtain great prosperity, glory, name and fame, and happiness. And as we read earlier, that if you are unable to undertake the practice by exchanging one's happiness with the sufferings of other sentient beings, there will be no happiness in this world, even far from achieving enlightenment. And so the same thing is said here, that even when you are within the samsara, because of practice of patience, there will be many beautiful experiences. You will be without sickness, your name and fame will grow, you will live for a long time, you will be able to bring happiness within yourself and happiness in the mind of the other people. And when you are able to develop such a benevolent mind, And even at the time when you are in the samsara and suffering from afflictive emotions, you will be able to actualize all types of happinesses. So this completes the sixth chapter, chapter on patience from the Bodhicharya Avatara. So this chapter on patience is really very important chapter for undertaking the practice of exchanging oneself for others. The next is the chapter on effort. And in this way, when a person is endowed with the practice of patience, then one can make an effort to, then one can start making the effort. And a person who has such perseverance and effort, that is the source of enlightenment. So in the case of effort, there are different types. Effort that forbears suffering, voluntarily forbears suffering, and effort of having patience when you engage in studies. So if you are fully equipped with the practice of patience, particularly the three types of patience, where you are able to voluntarily welcome suffering, and where you are able to undertake Dharma practice, and where you do not mind much when you encounter hardships and sufferings, then that lays the foundation for making the effort. And effort is important because it is through effort that you can gradually increase the positive qualities and decrease the negative qualities. And it is in this way that you will be able to abide in the state of enlightenment. When the mind being able to stay without disturbance on the object comes through the practice of effort. And just as in the absence of wind, the butter lamb can also stay without movement. So similarly, accumulation of merit and wisdom cannot arise in the absence of effort. And what is the nature of effort? Effort here refers to an endeavor that appreciates virtuous deeds. So here we are talking about not ordinary effort, but perseverance towards virtuous deeds. When your mind is delighted towards performing such virtuous deeds, then that is called effort. And how should one cultivate such effort? Effort should be cultivated by understanding the favorable factors and by cultivating them, and by identifying the unfavorable or obstructive factors and removing them. Now, with regard to the unfavorable factors, I will explain the unfavorable factors. There's laziness, attachment to bad objects, and procrastination. In the case of laziness, there are different kind of three kinds of lazinesses. The first kind of laziness, the word laziness actually, in Sanskrit it is called ale, or in Hindi we say alsi. So therefore you should first of all recognize these three types of lazinesses, and that is feeling of discouragement to oneself, procrastination, and attachment to bad objects. These are the three kinds of laziness. So laziness is not really sitting down doing nothing, but when you get attached to some bad objects and make effort towards some dead objects, that is also laziness. And when you procrastinate something, some virtuous deed, that is also laziness. And when you discourage yourself thinking that I cannot do this because of my lack of intelligence and so on, that is also laziness. And then the text identifies the causes of laziness. The first cause is the idleness, which grabs to happiness, and then craving that arises in relation to sleep, and thirdly, having no sense of sadness towards the sufferings of sentient beings. So out of this, the last one is the main factor. Laziness arises when you have no sense of feeling of sadness towards the experiences in the samsara. And so therefore it is important that how one is, how one wanders in the samsara aimlessly through the force of action and reflective emotions. And it is in this way you will be able to remove idleness, sleep. When you are caught and enmeshed by the snare of afflictive emotions, and then you are caught in the mouth of the messenger of the death, and still not, by not knowing that, you remain lazy. And therefore, so long as you are unable to remove afflictive emotions from your heart, from your mind, sufferings will be ceaseless, just as the water will never come to an end if the source has not been dried. So therefore, so long as you are unable to remove afflictive emotions, all sufferings in the form of old age, sickness, death will never stop. So therefore, you should today realize this. And by the messenger of the death, we are all killed one after the other. However, not by seeing that, you remain like a buffalo. Who even though is led to the place of execution, but still you remain completely confused and has no awareness of it. And in fact, all the paths are completely stopped by the messenger of the death, and the messenger of death is intently watching all of us, and this is true. All our paths are being stopped, because when it comes to performing some virtuous deeds, when we sit down and try to reflect on the meaning, we get tired. When we make circumambulation physically, we get tired. And when we recite some mantras, we immediately get tired. And when it comes to doing some good things, some bad things, you never get tired. And therefore there is this famous saying which says, when it comes to performing some negative deeds, then it's like a big boulder falling from the steep slope of a mountain. And when it comes to performing some good deeds or some virtuous deeds, then you are like a tired donkey that's led uphill. So when you are watched by this messenger of the death, and when all your paths are completely blocked by this messenger of the death, still how could you remain oblivious and simply enjoying food, sleeping and so on? When the situation is so frightening and so difficult, how could you still sleep and enjoy your food and so on? So in that situation, as he said in the Lamrim, that even when you are alive, without getting an opportunity to do the Dharma practice, quickly we will die. And therefore, so long as while we are alive, we should accumulate merit. While we are alive, we have opportunity to do Dharma practice. So even if it is just for a few minutes, you should perform those virtuous deeds. Every day, if you make an effort without wasting your time through laziness, sleep and so on, and then gradually when you are caught by a very fatal sickness and when it is sure that you will die, then at that time, even if you say, I will now give up my laziness and want to do some practice, then it is an improper time. You don't have the capacity to do the practice, so you must do the practice right now. And later on, when you become an old person, when you are physically, when you physically have no capacity, when you read a text, you get eye sore, eye pain, and when you try to memorize something, you forget, and your memory fails, and you can't hear the Dharma properly, and particularly when you are influenced by a fatal sickness, then your state of the mind is so disturbed that even if someone sits near you and helps you to remember some of the virtuous qualities, you feel like being disturbed. So there, then you are, at that time, you are in a very disturbed and difficult situation. So at that time, even if you think about removing laziness, that is an improper time. So therefore, every day, without being overpowered by laziness, procrastination, sleep and so on, so without being lazy, you should make an effort. So you should reflect about the possibilities of death coming at a time when you have started one project and had not finished it, and in other words, you have started just one project or work, and you have completed half of the work of some other project. At that time, suddenly the death might come, and at that time, what will you do? And when we are alive, you may also be kind of efficient, and people might also regard you with some respect. So at that time, you try to vanquish over your enemies and support your friends, and you lead a very hypocritical life and deceive others, exploit others, and you also remain under the impression that you are a very capable person, and other people also may show some respect, thinking that you are a very intelligent and capable person. But in this way, when you waste your life, and suddenly when you are seized by the afflictive emotions, as if your head is hammered by a big hammer, so at that time, what will you do? You will completely be stupefied. And even if you are a very intelligent person, there is no way you can deceive the messenger of the death, and you have to leave everything unfinished, whether it's your food or your drink or your work. You leave everything half finished or unfinished, and you will be destroyed. So reflect on this. And at that time, you feel very sad and get discouraged, and you remember some of the negative deeds that you have done earlier. And when you are alive, then even if you are passing through a very difficult situation, you can at least approach some other people and beg for their help and request for their help. But at that time, when you are dying, at that time, you will be full of repentance because you have not made any virtuous effort, and you can seek the help of nobody because your friends and relatives can help only in this life when you are alive. And now, if you are someone, and then with regard to the question of future life, how can you say that there is no future life? What about the mind at the time of the death? We can. It's difficult to say that the mind is dependent only on the body, and it is not reasonable. It is not a reasonable statement to say that this mind, which is non-physical and luminous, its sole cause is just the physical body. And not only today, even in the ancient Indian philosophy, There are some hedonistic viewpoints, like the Charvaka viewpoint, where they say that just like the stone and the lines on the stone, similar is the case with the body and the mind relation, and as soon as the body dies, the mind also disappears. But that is not a reasonable explanation. And even in this life, we do encounter so many strange things in our life, which we can never explain in relation only with our human physical experiences. So much is dependent on our mental experiences. So at that time of death, you feel really sad and discouraged. You tears come from your eye, and your eyes, in fact, will become swollen and become red. And the physicians will say that there's nothing I can do. And your relatives and friends will also lose their hope. And at that time, you will worry about what will be the consequence of your future lives. And you will only be looking at the face of the messenger of the death. And at that time, you will recollect and remember the negative deeds that you have done while you are alive, and your mind will then be afflicted and tormented. And even though at the time of the death you can't take any of those things, the wealth, friends and so on, for which you accumulated so much negative deeds, but what you can carry is only those negative deeds. And even when you hear the sound of the hell being, you get so frightened that you will almost become mad. And and at that time, what will you do? And at that time, you will really be like a fish that has been thrown on the ground, full of fear and writhing in pain. And so if this is the fear that you encounter even before dying, there's no need to talk about the suffering that you will experience when you, after death. So you might have accumulated actions that will project you into the boiling hell. And now imagine and think about the sufferings that you will have when this your youthful flesh will be burnt by those boiling waters. And having accumulated such actions that would project you into the hell realm, how could you relax right now? And we all have accumulated, it's very clear that we all have accumulated such powerful negative actions. So what is important is that while we have such powerful negative emotions, at the same time, if we have equally powerful virtuous deeds, then that is at least fine, but that is very difficult. Because as I said earlier, in the case of performance of negative actions, the motivation is strong, the actual deed is strong, and the conclusion is strong. Whereas in the virtuous actions, either the motivation is missing, or during the actual practice, there is no intensity, or the dedication or conclusion is not good. And without making effort in the virtuous deeds, it is futile to expect a good result. And therefore, to aspire good fruit without making effort. And similarly, in the case of those people who are very sensitive, who are unable to tolerate even minor problems, such person will always experience hardships and difficulties. And so for such a person, in their day-to-day life, they will always complain and they will always say that something is wrong and something is missing. And whereas in the case of some other people who have some sense of patience, they will not go on making such complaints. And even if they have encountered such hardships and problems, they will keep quiet and will be able to tolerate it. So right from the time when you are born, you are under the grasp, under the hold of the messenger of the death. And as he said one text, that right from the first day of your birth, without waiting even for one moment, you kept on moving closer towards death. And even, and not only you are under the control of the death, but you have been accumulating many negative deeds. But still, even though you have so much problem that you aspire good things without making effort, and you are very sensitive and unable to tolerate any problems, and you are under the control of death, but still not realizing all this, if you remain as if you have, as if you are an arhat, or as if you, if you are a god without any problem, then while remaining in that state, you will be destroyed by all sufferings. And therefore, by using this boat or ship-like life of human being, you should cross the great ocean of suffering. Since it is difficult to find this human life which is like a boat in the future, you stupid, do not sleep, or this is not the time to sleep. And one must undertake Dharma practice, the supreme Dharma practice, because it is this Dharma practice which is the source of infinite joy and happiness of this life and for many lives to come. And it is the distraction, excitement, so on, which are the causes of suffering. Therefore, why should you appreciate and enjoy being distracted and excited, which are the causes of suffering? So therefore, why is it that you abandon the supreme source of joy, the supreme Dharma, and why you enjoy getting distracted and excited, which are the causes of suffering? So this means that you spend most of time in distraction and excitement, whether you spend your time in different kind of sports or some other worldly activities. So therefore it is improper to give up the supreme source of joy and to get distracted with the causes of suffering. Yes. Then as an antidote to the laziness of procrastination, when you go to a war, first of all, you should put on the armor. So putting on that armor like effort, you should not procrastinate. You should not postpone your virtuous practices. So just as when one goes to the war, one first of all puts on the armor, so likewise you should make the armor-like effort and do not procrastinate. And then you should also accumulate, just as when you go to war, you accumulate the necessary armies, so similarly you accumulate the necessary facilitating factors. And then during the actual practice, you should have total control over yourself and be flexible towards virtuous practices. And And it is in this way then you should develop the feeling of sameness of oneself and others, and also the practice of exchanging oneself for others. And then the next verse explains about how to practice and how to develop the antidote or the positive counter forces. Now this is important, because here also one might think that since when we talk about the ultimate enlightenment, it is such a high state, how can I achieve such a state? And even in minor cases, when you undertake certain study, people say that when people are reluctant to do, then they would retrace back and they would say, I'm very lazy person and I'm not intelligent, I will not be able to study. So when it comes to doing negative deeds, if you retrace back and think that this is something that I can't do, that's wonderful. But we don't do that when it comes to doing negative deeds. But when it comes to doing something which is positive and constructive, particularly achieving enlightenment, then you have this habit of discouraging yourself. I think it was Nagabodhi who says this in his 20 verses of the Mandala Rite. So in one of these texts, it says that the enlightenment is not given by everybody, it is not owned by anybody, it is only by it is through realizing the nature of one's mind and that one achieves enlightenment. So therefore, when we talk about achieving enlightenment or Buddhahood, do not think that Buddhahood or enlightenment is something that is owned and possessed by someone, and you have to beg for it, and somebody will come and give it to you. So that's not the process of achieving enlightenment. And so therefore, enlightenment is not possessed by anybody. So you don't have to beg to someone else to get it. And likewise, when we talk about enlightenment, it cannot be given to you as a gift by somebody. And because when we talk about achieving enlightenment, it is actualized primarily through understanding and using the clear light mind. It is this primordially clear light mind whose continuity goes to the ultimate state of enlightenment. And so it is this ordinary mind which right now is controlled by afflictive emotions, which when transforms actualizes the state of enlightenment. And therefore this primordial clear light mind is one which has which is something that everybody possesses. All sentient beings who has feeling for happiness and suffering and so on, everybody possesses such a clear light mind. So long as you possess a mind, you possess clear light mind. And it is this primordial clear light mind which is the ultimate star for actualizing enlightenment. And therefore the seed of enlightenment is not something that you have to borrow from some other or lend from somebody, but and it cannot be given to you as a gift to you by somebody. It is there within yourself as an inherent natural quality. So therefore, now therefore, when we talk about Buddhahood or enlightened state, it is achieved by recognizing and realizing the nature of your own mind, and by thoroughly and completely understanding the nature of this clear light mind, that you actualize enlightenment. And by completely and thoroughly understanding the clear light nature of your mind, when you are able to remain forever in that state of clear light mind, then you achieve enlightenment. So isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
So therefore you should not say that how can I achieve enlightenment, and therefore do not procrastinate and do not get discouraged. And because the Buddhas who always speak the word of truth has said that even the insects and the worms in the flesh, even these, if they make an effort, if they invigorate the power of the effort, then the very difficult to obtain state of enlightenment will be actualized. And also, if you see the nature of the teaching of the Buddha, you will find that he has taught various levels of teachings that is relevant to the minds of the followers. Even so, even the tiniest insects have the power to achieve enlightenment, and the focus is, as I explained earlier, that everyone possesses the Buddha nature, the Buddha potential. Now, if this is the case, then particularly in our own case, today in terms of lineage, or we are born as a human being, in the human category, in the human lineage, and we also have the intelligence to be able to recognize between what is harmful and what is beneficial, and therefore, if we do not abandon the ways of life of Bodhisattva, then without long, through practice, in successive lives, our mind will become more and more pure, and thereby we will definitely actualize enlightenment. And so therefore you should not be discouraged by thinking that there are so many things to practice and develop. Now again you might express this word of reluctance by saying that yes, it is true that one should make an endeavor, but still I feel it's very difficult because there are so many techniques and methods to be adopted. So this is answered by saying that if you say that even then when you undertake the Bodhisattva way of practice, then you need to undertake so many different types of practice, including sacrificing your hands and legs and so on. So therefore I am really frightened to undertake such a practice. And through that way, if you get discouraged, and then there, this is answered by saying that here you are seeing some difficulties because you are not able to weigh the heavy and the light. Because even those practices which may be extremely difficult in the beginning, when you are a beginner of the Dharma practice, then gradually you will be able to practice them very easily when you get habituated. And in fact, when Buddha gave the teaching, he did not ask you to undertake such difficult practices right from the beginning. So depending as and when you progress your spiritual practice, you can gradually move on to those more difficult practices. And at that time, because of habituation, you will not find them difficult. So therefore, it is because of ignorance that you get frightened. And not only that, if you think that then for countless eons, even without making such an effort towards virtuous practices, you have lost your life many times and you have suffered many times, including your body being cut, burnt, split, and of course not achieving enlightenment. And now, in the case of those kind of hardships and sufferings that you encounter in the pursuit of achieving enlightenment, there is a limit, because such sufferings have a limit, and gradually you will be able to put an end to sufferings, and gradually you will achieve enlightenment. Now, without making such an effort towards achieving enlightenment, then even if you encounter countless hardships, there is no limit to it. You will keep on suffering, as has been in many lives in the cycle of existence. So therefore, when we encounter hardships to achieve enlightenment, it is really like trying to undertaking a surgery where you cut your body and then take out the bullet from your body in order to remove the pain. So in order to eliminate that major physical pain, you have to tolerate that minor wound that you experienced through surgery. So this is something that we all know, even in the ordinary worldly parlance. And so even in the case of ordinary doctors and physicians, there are such healing practices like cutting your body or operating upon your body, many of your physical sicknesses are removed. So therefore, in order to remove many of these types of sufferings, you should tolerate those minor sufferings and unhappiness. And particularly in the case of the Buddha's process of showing the path, he has shown a path which no ordinary physician and doctors can show. So in the case of ordinary treatment given by the doctors and physicians, they are very painful. Whereas in the case of the path shown by the supreme physician, the Buddha taught a very comfortable path. And by following that very comfortable path, you are able to remove great disease and great sickness. So this process is explained in the next verse, where it says that the Buddha first encourages undertaking practice of giving vegetables and so on, and then gradually when you get habituated with that, you will even be able to give a part of your body, a part of flesh of your body. And this is possible because gradually with the training of the mind, when you are able to see your own body like a piece of vegetable, then there will be no difficulty in giving up your body. Whereas right now we are not able to do that because we have such strong misconceptions based on self-cherishing attitude and self-grasping. And such a person who has abandoned negative deeds, therefore there will be no suffering, and because they are wise and learned, there will be no unhappiness of the mind. And in this way, it is misconception of the reality, and it is because of these negative deeds that your body and mind is harmed. And with the accumulation of merit, there will be physical well-being, and because of knowledge and learnedness, there will be mental happiness. And therefore, even one has to abide in the samsara for the purpose of other sentient beings, those with compassion never get discouraged. And it is through the power of bodhicitta that the negative deeds that you have accumulated in the past lives is put to an end, and one is able to collect ocean-like merits. And therefore, this is superior than the lower parts like that of the sarvakas. So therefore, this process of path of bodhisattva is said to be superior than the path of the sarvakas. So therefore, there will be no suffering, and even if there is suffering, then one will be able to handle it. As I said earlier, that it is better to have suffering than to happiness. If there is suffering, then I will see the sufferings of other sentient beings. I will be able to see the nature of samsara, and I will be able to enter into virtuous practices. And particularly when you are able to see yourself as one of the four or five elements, and when you are able to see your own life as a source of nourishment and sustenance of all other sentient beings, then the time is not an important factor. It doesn't matter whether it takes count 3 aeons or countless aeons. Your whole purpose of existence is to be of benefit to other sentient beings. Therefore, you should eliminate all kinds of fatigue and tiredness, and you should mount on the mind of bodhicitta. And in this way, how could you get tired when you move from a happy state to other happy state? So it's 4:30 and we stop here. Tomorrow I hope to finish much more. Then day after tomorrow is the 25th according to the Tibetan lunar calendar. And some people had requested me to give a blessing from the Tirchu, which is called removing the inauspiciousnesses. So on 27th of the Western calendar, there will be no usual teaching. So for the rest of you, it will be a resting day. And so this blessing is from Nyingmaba teaching. So that blessing includes and this ritual is called the ritual of removing inauspiciousness, which is practiced in relation to host of deities, many deities. So those of you who want to receive it, of course you can come, and there is no need for all of you to come. And so day after tomorrow you can take rest and relax. Then on 28th again we continue with our usual teaching on these two texts. Then we continue with 28, 29 and then 30. Then on 30th March we'll finish this text, and also I'm planning to give an empowerment of Avalokiteshvara Pachon Jigme Wangchuk, having 9 deities. So this is quite relevant to the founding, the celebration of the founding day of the Tibetan Ganden Phodrang government. And then on 31st morning, I will confer a long life initiation to the public through the White Dara, and then people will also make the long life request. So this is how we will proceed. So accordingly, you can plan your travel schedule. Thank you. I think it's